Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're continuing our coverage of last night's primary election in South Dakota. Now it's time for our Dakota political junkies. Joining us on the phone from Rapid City, we have Seth Tupper with the Rapid City Journal. Hey, Seth.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And on the phone from Sioux Falls, Dana Ferguson with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader and Argus Leader Media. Hey, Dana.
Hey, Lori. How are you?
Doing all right. Everybody tired? Everybody get some sleep? No, you didn't sleep. Let's start with you. A big surprise, at least Rubinger has kind of given us an overview of who won and who lost, and I'm wondering if we could start with you with some of the big surprises. Did anything jump out at you last night as a surprise, or did everything unfold kind of like maybe you thought it would?
I think we knew just based on polling and some of the comments we'd heard over the last several weeks that the winners we saw last night were going to come out ahead. But I was surprised by the margin of victory for Kristi Noem. And I think there were a number of people who felt that way too. That was the vibe that I got last night from her victory party. I think there was a strong sense that she was going to come out narrowly, but blowing out Marty Jackley in a double-digit victory was not something that any of us expected. And I think, too, some of the difficulties with voting centers, nobody really expected that. And I think Seth probably has a few stories he'd be willing to tell. But some surprises there as far as things just not going to plan and results not coming out when we'd hoped to see them.
Right. Seth, give us an overview of what happened there, because there was a little bit of controversy in Fennington County and other counties.
They started for me. My wife went to vote at 7:30 in the morning before she went to work, and she called me at 7:45 and said they wouldn't let me vote. Uh-huh. And there's some computer glitch, and I don't know what's going on, but they said I couldn't vote, and so I left. And I thought, what in the world is going on? So I called the tip in to our editor, and you know, the gears started going. And through my colleague, Christopher Vondracek, and myself and others looking into this, essentially the electronic poll books that are used to check voters in were malfunctioning.
So what is that? Seth, because when I go in, there's a you know, from
paper.
League of Women Voters has a piece of paper, and I tell them my name, and they flip through 72 papers to get to the W's. And so, to explain to us what an electronic poll book even is.
Well, apparently, from what we heard yesterday, there's only, I think, 8 counties in the state that have gone, instead of using the paper, they use these laptops that tap into an internet-based system to do the check-in process, just as a replacement for the paper. And when it works, apparently it's a lot quicker and it's more accurate. But yesterday it didn't work at about half the polling places in Rapid City. And for up to about an hour and a half, people were showing up at these 16 polling places and being told, you can't vote, and we don't know when you'll be able to. And if you want to vote, you're going to have to come back later in the day.
Wow.
And so it was, just to put it bluntly, it was a train wreck. I mean, you had people that were being turned away from the polls, and I'd never seen anything quite like it. They ended up extending the hours of all of these polling places, and we'll never know, you know, how many people actually came back and voted after being turned away and how many never came back. But certainly there had to have been some that did not come back and lost their opportunity to vote, perhaps because of this this problem with the e-poll books.
Right.
So, and then, of course, that pushed our results very late. The Pennington County finished counting at 11:57 p.m. last night, and I know that because I was at the courthouse.
And that's why we're tired,
it was a long day, and it was very unfortunate. But, it didn't appear to affect many of the bigger races, but in, you know, for example, some of the precinct committee woman races, they were very close, separated some of them by, you know, 4 votes or whatever, and who knows what kind of difference was made by these irregularities early in the day.
Right. Any surprises in the results for you, Seth, or at that point were you just so tired that, not that you're just taking it as it came
o'clock
in the morning?
more localized surprises,
right.
Probably.
Yeah.
You know, we have a county commissioner here, George Farabee, who's made some statewide news. He's He is currently being prosecuted by the county for refusing to adhere to the county's septic system laws. He's Right. He doesn't want to get his septic system pumped or inspected, and he thinks it's an intrusion by a big government on his civil liberties. He's being prosecuted for that, but he took a drubbing last night by 32 percentage points in his primary, which was somewhat of a surprise. I mean, because he had a base of supporters that carried him to victory 4 years ago, and that appeared to abandon him last night. So that was the margin of that loss for him was surprising on a local level for us.
Dana, the Lincoln County Sheriff race also was sort of an interesting one to watch because it looked like there was one leader and then all of a sudden it flipped. And that was an interesting one if you were following that local race for Lincoln County Sheriff.
Yeah, I agree. And that one had been up to the last minute yesterday. We'd seen a lot of sort of campaign flyers, people waving around their signs and driving around trucks with different candidates' names on them. And then yesterday, across our area, it sounded like turnout was certainly lower than expected. But in that county, it seemed like there was a strong understanding that people were going out with a strong purpose to vote in that race, in addition to some of the top ticket races. But that was one that was fun to watch, unexpected, but here we are the day after the election, still trying to understand what it all means.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about Nome and Jack Lee and bring Dusty Johnson into this a little bit, because after the campaign victory speeches are given, Kristi Nome talks about, people, you know, kind of talked about the negativity of her campaign in the final weeks. Dusty Johnson, you know, and Kristi talked about his time to heal the party, to move forward. Dusty Johnson kind of came forward and said, we were positive the whole time. We never approved anything negative. So, Seth, let's talk about this idea of negative campaigning and whether it works or not, because on one hand, you have the candidates themselves saying, oh, people are tired of that. You have voters saying, we're tired of that. And then, you know, Kristi Nome certainly gained ground in those last 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, to touch on Dusty Johnson, he was able to run a positive campaign because there's a Washington super PAC that spent upwards of $300,000 against his main opponent. So that's about convenient for him. The last I calculated, I have to look at it again, for every dollar that Chantel Krebs's campaign committee spent in support of her on her own campaign, this super PAC, Citizens for a Strong America, spent 75 cents against her. So, it's pretty easy to stay positive when you have somebody else doing all the negative campaigning against your opponent. And then in the Jack Lee Nome race, my impression was some of the talk about the negative campaigning was a little overblown. I mean, I didn't view it as getting personal or particularly vicious. Those who can remember the legendary Barnett Kirby Rounds primary, and how just personally vicious that got between Barnett and Kirby. When you look at the things that Nome, sort of the attacks she launched against Jack Lee in the last couple weeks here, if you trace them back, they were issue-based, and you can you can have problems if you want with the negative style in which they were framed, but behind every one of those attacks, there was a legitimate issue she was raising, and it was based on research. If you don't like that, so be it, or the way she framed it.
Right, but let me ask.
I didn't view it as being particularly personal or vicious in any way.
Let me ask you this, Seth, as a follow up, because during the victory speech, when Kristi Nome came out and addressed her supporters, they talked about, someone from her campaign, I'm sorry, I've just forgotten his name, but talked about how we need those Marty Jack Lee voters to come be on our side now. And after painting the picture that she did of Marty Jack Lee being connected to these problems in state government, how does she manage that relationship and Marty Jack Lee's support of her campaign going forward when she's clearly pointed out some things that would indicate that he might be attached to some transparency issues at the very least?
I think she just points out that the other guy's a Democrat.
That's it. We're done.
That's as simple as that. Primaries get rough, but afterwards, the party will come together, and because everybody will realize, well, Even if I didn't vote for the other Republican, most Republicans are not going to vote for a Democrat necessarily.
Right.
So I think it's really just as simple as that.
Dana, what's next for Marty Jackley? Obviously, he's got the Gear Up trial, and he's still state's attorney of, Attorney General of South Dakota. What is his political future as you see it?
You know, it's hard to tell at this point. And I think he is going to keep his head down for a while, keep working in the office he's currently in. Obviously, we have the Gear Up trials that'll be coming up. We could have the Burgett murder trial coming up. But he's said throughout the course of his campaign, and he said it last night, you know, he has a background in farming. He has a background in engineering and in law. So it's not as though he doesn't have career options. It's just a matter of what he'll decide to do now. Is he going to stay in law? Is he going to go into engineering in some fashion or stay in politics? So time will tell a little bit there. And he said last night that he is going to do what he needs to do to help Congresswoman Noem. I think that is good news for her campaign. She also said that she has a past of bringing people together after a tough primary, and she anticipates she'll do that again. So it'll be interesting to watch whether those two sort of sides can come back together before November. And I'd agree with Seth. I'd think that they'll be willing to do that. They seem to be united on more things than they're divided on. But at some measure, time will tell what he'll end up doing and how she'll end up bringing the party back together.
Yeah. Seth, what does Billy Sutton have to do? What do you think that he was thinking or his campaign strategy might be going forward now that he knows his opponent for November is Congresswoman Noem?
I don't know. I was thinking this morning, you know, Don Barnett, who our current arena is named after, former mayor of Rapid City, he emailed this morning several people or just with his thoughts on the arena vote. And he also included some thoughts on Jackley losing, just saying that, you know, history shows that West River people don't fare very well usually in statewide races. And that's true. Mm-hmm. And that struck me. And I thought, you know, if a West River Republican and Jackley couldn't beat Kristi Noem, it's going to be awfully hard for a West River Democrat and Billy Sutton to beat Kristi Noem.
Right.
And so he's got a real uphill battle. I don't know. He positions himself as a pretty moderate to conservative Democrat. And I don't know, you know, perhaps there'll be a pitch there that he is more moderate at a time when the country is sort of torn apart with extremism. Maybe that's his pitch to voters. We'll have to wait and see that that develop over time.
Right. Dana, I'm in the gas station this morning getting ready to drive down to Vermilion, and the gentlemen in the gas station are talking about the election, of course, and Congresswoman Noem is not really leading with this, first female Republican nominee or potentially the first female governor. You don't hear her talk about it, but in the gas station I walked in and the first thing I heard was, "I don't want a lady governor." And I looked over in the corner and I was like, oh, well, let's hear what they're saying. So it was definitely top of their mind that they had just witnessed a little bit of history. What are your thoughts?
You know, it's not something that the Congresswoman has really advertised or leaned into the way that we've seen female candidates in other states or in other races really embrace. And in talking to her about it a couple weeks before the primary, she said, you know, I don't really think about that very much. It's not something that she was taught growing up, it sounds like. She was never sort of taught to think of herself differently than her brothers. She said it would be exciting to be the first woman to receive the nomination from the GOP, as she did last night, but I guess not something that she's quite as conscious about as much as just winning to move on and potentially winning the general to get to peer. So it's interesting to hear other people share their opinions about it. For I think a number of female legislators who were there last night too, it was a symbolic moment, but for Kristi Noem, I don't know that it had that same value in that same way.
Yeah. Seth, let's talk about the race for the South Dakota lone congressional seat and Dusty Johnson making the quip that, you know, it's going to be kind of a boring run to November with Bjorkman and Johnson, a couple of people who like to talk about policy. Is that true? Do you think it's just going to be kind of a, intellectual conversation between now and November between those two candidates?
To a certain extent, yes, and that's somewhat refreshing, I think, to people who enjoy, you know, a thoughtful campaign. But, let's not underestimate Tim Bjorkman's ability to land a good jab. I know, we haven't heard from him much lately as we've all focused on the Republican primary, obviously. But, you know, he's been pretty pointed in some of his criticisms of the Republican establishment, and especially I interviewed him after the, after the Parkland, Florida school shooting, and he was very pointed in basically saying that Republicans in Congress from South Dakota basically had blood on their hands and weren't doing enough to stop school shootings.
And for him, it was because of the money, right? I'm guessing, based on my interview with him, that he really focuses again and again on what money are you accepting.
Right.
From people.
He's big on getting money out of at least diminishing the influence of money in politics. And so there'll be a lot of disagreements, but I do think it will be, pretty civil, and that's the type of person both of them are. And I think it will be competitive, we haven't had in 1978 the last time we elected a Democratic governor. We do have a history of voters in South Dakota being willing to send Democrats to Congress, and so I definitely don't think that Dusty Johnson is going to be able to coast on being a Republican. He's going to have a competitive race, and it'll be except for those of us who would like to see a more thoughtful turn in politics, this might be a fun race to watch.
Dana, having interviewed both those candidates, Dusty Johnson and Tim Bjorkman, I personally am excited. I mean, they have some very distinct ways of looking at the role of government, and it's a real foundational issue about what you want your government to do, and then some distinct differences. I think that's just going to be fun to watch. Those two candidates, smart, thoughtful candidates, sort of pick that apart.
Right. It's going to be sort of a policy wonk's dream debate set up there.
So we're not bored by that. Maybe Dusty thinks other people will be, but we're not.
Other people.
any thoughts on what comes next for someone like Chantel Krebs or Neil Tapia? Dana, what do you think?
Well, we know that this morning Chantel Krebs was already showing up for jury duty. It seems like maybe the worst setup for the morning after a loss, but she was doing that this morning. Going out and serving if she gets called to do so. And she indicated she still wants to keep working on reforming Washington. And we only heard little snippets from Neil Tapia last night, but he indicated the first thing he wanted to do is go take a nap. And I don't think anybody can blame him there.
Right.
That sounds pretty good.
We can all vote on that the day after.
I anticipate we'll see both of them in some capacity running again or staying involved in public life in some way.
Seth, we have just about a minute left or even less, and I just want to point everybody to your work at rapidcityjournal.com about Poets Table. And so just tell us a little story during the last 30 seconds or so of how you took a hike with a 64-year-old guy and learned that maybe you need to work on that a little bit more. And then everyone can go read the full thing.
The statewide news about the vandalism at Poets Table, a local former rock climber, Bob Archbold, 64, sent me a nice long remembrance of his friendship with the guy, John Rake, who created Poets Table.
Yeah.
And he told a story about guiding John Rake to the top of this rock formation called Lober's Leap in the 70s. And so we decided to run his piece, his email, as an essay, and I thought it'd be fun if he would guide the photographer and I out to Lober's Leap. And we didn't realize quite how strenuous it would be. There was some vertical rock climbing, and we ended up bailing out and watched as the 64-year-old guy with white hair and a white mustache summited and climbed to the top, and we stayed behind, not able to keep up.
Go read that story, rapidcitytribune.com. It's great work. Seth Tupper, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Dana Ferguson, you can find her at argusleader.com. Dana, thanks so much.
Thanks, Lori.